Welcome everyone to Mindfulness Week, Applied Mindfulness week 5. Just before we start, I want to mention that this class is dedicated to Ezra ben Elisha Zilka, HaKohen, whose Yahrzeit is next week, and I wish the family all the best and long life. Before we do a review, let me just share with you, I'm sure everyone listens every week and we all take away what we can, including myself. But this morning I was put to the real test, but we made it. I had to practice a lot of mindfulness this morning with so many things. I overslept and my wife had to leave for the overseas and I hadn't finished preparing. So if you detect it throughout, you'll know why. But I hope it'll be okay. Okay, I see Dan just walked in. I just want to mention today's shiur is dedicated to Ezra ben Elisha Zilka Kohen. See you outside next week. Wish everyone all the best and only good things. So just a little bit of a review. Last week we talked about a few things. We talked about, first of all, that the inner struggle is always there and that it needs to be there because that's the design of the human being. We've been talking about this for a while. But it comes from two different parts within our personality. God gave us both the good drive, the godly soul, and the animal soul. And last week, he brought the concept of the olive oil being the metaphor, the symbol, next week's parasha, actually, where God told Moses to produce pure olive oil, to produce the beautiful lights of the menorah, the candelabra in the temple, which symbolically and Kabbalistically represent the souls of the Jewish people. And he told him that the oil must be produced by crushing olives. And the commentaries explain that concept of sometimes a challenge represented by the crushing of the olives is specifically what produces the strength and produces the purity of the oil. So sometimes, as we always say, we always pray for not to be tested, but sometimes our inner challenges or our weaknesses create challenges which are there for a reason, which cause us to become stronger and to become better people and produce that pure olive oil. We talk about the concept of never giving up, and it's never too late. And the idea is that we don't strive for perfection, but we do strive for effort. And we brought the idea of the machatzit ha-shekel, the half a shekel symbol, which is the mitzvah that was done in the temple times of giving the half yearly tax. But the Torah emphasizes that each half a shekel contains the currency of 10 gerah, and 10 is a number of perfection representing all 10 powers of the soul. And therefore the idea, the lesson that we learned from that last week with a bit more detail was that it's okay to be half, it's okay to be imperfect as long as we're giving it all we got, as long as we're trying to invest all of the power. And then finally, we talked last week about something which I want to develop. It was very, very brief at the end, but I want to develop it a bit more today. And that's the strengthening of the good muscle. Just to remind you, we brought an idea, which I think I remember reading in the name of Rabbi Jacobowitz, who bases himself on a verse in Tehillim that says, "Lahagid ba'boker chastecha," that King David wanted to convey God's kindness during the day, in the morning, and his faith at night. And we said that everyone has morning and night. We all go through life with two parts. Hopefully we have more morning than we do night, but nevertheless, whatever the dose is, we all have times of morning, which is bright times, better times, good times, times of clarity, times when things are going more smoothly. And then we also sometimes have the times of night, which are times of challenge, times of confusion, times of darkness. And what the verse is teaching us is that the more we are able to connect during the times of morning, now the morning, M-O-R that is, and the more we're able to connect and to strengthen ourselves during the time that is good, the more ammunition, the more tools, the more resources we have during the time at night. Now, I wanted to develop this idea and to go through it in more detail to understand what that means and how important it is. But first thing, just to mention a couple of principles. First of all, even though we've talked about this concept of the inner struggle that we all have from time to time, but we know that it's not always the same. Like we just said, there's morning and there's night. Right? So some days we focus better than others. Some days we're not always so distracted. In the context of our discussion on mindfulness, some days it's just a lot easier to focus, a lot easier to be present, a lot easier to maximize the potential of every moment. It is generally in our world that we live today, a difficult thing to do because we're so distracted and we're so fast moving with all the different distractions and the technology that we have, which is very good but can also damage us and so on, as we've talked about many times. But nevertheless, we have those days that it's just easier. I'm sure we all have that experience. You know, we finish a day and we think to ourselves, today was good. Today I was able to focus. Today I accomplished. Today I got things done. Today I kept to my plan. Today I was able to achieve, and so on and so forth. And it's those days that we often don't take enough advantage of. It's those days, number one, that we don't appreciate as much as we should, perhaps. But what I want to sort of drive home more is a different concept, that it's those days that we don't use out to the fullest and practice the tools and practice the strategies. And as I said last week, strengthen the muscles of mindfulness so that when we have the days that are more distracting, we have better resources. So that's the focus of today, really. We've talked about strategies in dealing with negative thought patterns and distractions and so on and so forth. But today, let's just go to what I wanted to pick up at the end of last week and sort of talk about the days that we don't, the days that are good, and what we should be doing during those days to strengthen ourselves, to really utilize the potential of those days so that we are strengthening and piling on and filling up the reservoir of resources so that when we do have the days of challenge, which we all inevitably will have on some level, we are much more armed and much more resourced to be able to deal with them. Because we also need to link that, of course, to the other principle that we've been talking about, and that is that when we do have challenging days, and when we have challenging days, particularly that we are bombarded by negative thinking patterns which distract us and hold us back and cause us not to focus and not to be present and not to be in the now and in the moment, we need to remember the principle which we've been talking about throughout the last few weeks, that to remember that those distracting thought patterns are not us. Okay? They're in an invading force. That's incredibly, I know we've said it many times, but it's an incredibly important idea. Because when we understand that disconnection, when we understand that there's us and that there's them, meaning not as it's a war, but there's us, meaning the true identity of who I am, the real me, the soul that drives me for a life of values and purpose, the soul that gives me the ability to be present, the soul that gives me the ability to live my life in a positive, productive, purposeful way, that's the real me, coming from the godly force, the godly soul, as we've talked about. And then there's the sometimes when the animal becomes stronger and invades and bombards us with things that are foreign, and sometimes very, very powerfully so. Negative thought patterns, those thoughts that keep on coming into our head that are trying to distract us and keep us away from focusing and being present. And yes, we have to deal with it, as we've given the analogy of the noisy passenger that's not getting off the bus. And we have to deal with it with the various approaches. But the stronger the real us is, if that makes sense, the stronger the real we is, the better equipped we are to engage, to fight, to ignore, to take whatever approach you want to take with those invading, intruding forces. Okay, that's the principle. In other words, if we have a challenge and we want to ward it off, you can only fight back or you can only ignore whatever approach it is, or you can only challenge, as we said, sometimes you've got to challenge the thoughts. We talked about the ABCD model before. Sometimes we just have to ignore it, sometimes we have to just replace it with something else. Whatever the case is, whatever approach it is, depending on the nature of the intrusion, depending on the nature of the invasion. But nevertheless, who is employing the strategy? It's us, the real us. And therefore, the real us has to be strong. The real us has to be fine-tuned. The real us has to be really developed and properly exercised and fit, so to speak, in order to do that when that invasion, when that intrusion comes. Does this symbol, does this analogy make sense? Yeah, is it clear? And therefore, that's what I mean when I say that on the days where we're able to do that, see, it's very hard to start practicing when we're distracted and we're held down. To use the imagery, if someone attacks you and you're already on the ground and someone's holding you down, that's not a good time to start getting fit. Right? That's not a good time to learn how to fight back. You've got to learn how to fight back when no one's attacking you. It's still challenging when you have to put it into practice. Because, you know, everything in life when we learn in theory always becomes that much more difficult when we've got to put it into practice. That's true. But nevertheless, the starting point is practicing it when we don't have to put it into practice. And exercising it and really getting symbolically and spiritually, emotionally, psychologically fit, so then we are attacked by this foreign force, we're able to fight back. In using whatever approach we need to use. So what I wanted to do, therefore, is to revisit. Well, we mentioned a couple last week, but I want to revisit a few more. We did this a long time ago. I want to do it from a different perspective and a bit more detail. We talked about mindfulness because the literature on mindfulness and putting it together with some Jewish principles, there are a number of tools, a number of separate tools, that even though we talk about mindfulness being the concept of focusing and being aware and being present, not judgmentally, and so on and so forth, but if we break it down, there are a number of different components, a number of different strategies, a number of different resources that we have that allow us and enable us and give us the ability to be more mindful. And those are the things that we have to practice on days where we can. And we often don't. That's the point I guess I wanted to make today. We often don't because things are going well, so why do that, right? But we have to consciously put a conscious effort on taking every one of these things and practicing them in different ways on days where we can, and days where we're going smoothly, and days where we're not distracted and not being attacked, so that when we are, we have enough resources to be able to do that and to bring ourselves back to the presence. So the first one is, and I call them mindfulness tools, right? Because apart from general mindfulness exercises, which teach us to be aware and to be much more conscious and be present, like breathing and all the things we've talked about in the past, these are different tools, but important tools that just give us the ability to be more mindful. So the first thing is being aware, right? What I mean is that any given day, even when things are going well, we don't necessarily fully focus on everything that we're doing. And maybe some of the time we're not even able to do that the entire day, right? But what we need to do is, on any given good day, again, we're talking about the good days, we actually have to just practice awareness. Now, practice awareness, I don't only mean by fully engaging in specific mindfulness meditations or mindfulness exercises, which also play an important role. I'm talking about just taking something very, very simple, and this is a very, very practical thing. On a regular, any given day, we assign ourselves some tasks which we're going to do anyway. Things that could be as simple as brushing our teeth, taking a shower, whatever it is, right? But we make a conscious effort. It might be eating a meal. It might be talking to someone. Now, we talk to people all day, right? Because life experience is about relationships. We relate to people all day, whether it's on the phone, whether it's in person, face-to-face, whatever the case is, we're engaging with people all the day. And safe to say that we're not always fully present in the way we engage with people, which is a shame because relationships are much stronger and much more powerful when we do engage properly, right? But what we can do is every single day we can make up with ourselves, and I'm talking about good days, not when the challenging days come, that today I'm going to pick two or three things and be properly focused, be aware. I'm actually going to eat something, but I'm going to not do anything else while I eat, and I'm going to actually be aware of what I'm eating. As simple as I'm going to be aware of what this tastes like and be appreciative of it. To take it a bit of a deeper level, I'm going to be aware when I eat where it comes from. Then I'm going to be aware that it's a gift from God. You know, in Jewish thought, that's the purpose. When I say that's the purpose, it's not always done properly, but it's the purpose of brachot, the purpose of making a blessing before we eat. Right? We say Hamotzei Lechem Haaretz before. Unfortunately, sometimes we get so used to doing it, so you can do it you can be aware unmindfully. That's an oxymoron, but we can do that. So sometimes by rote, you know, I was taught to make blessings when I was 3 years old, and sometimes it's a challenge to make them mindfully because it's just an automatic reaction, right? But it's not supposed to be the way. The purpose of it is actually to think about it for a second. Where does food come from? And it's a gift. It might be something that I expect every day. It might be something that's going to probably happen every day, please God. But nevertheless, I shouldn't take it for granted. It's a fascinating thing, you know, that there's two kinds of blessings in Jewish thought. One is the blessings that we make before we eat, and then there's a blessing we make after we eat. And they're a different type of awareness. They're both sort of the concept of being aware and appreciative, but blessing before we eat is almost like the Talmud says, almost like asking permission. recognizing that everything ultimately, nothing belongs to us, it belongs to God. The world was created by God, and it's kind of getting permission to eat. And the other one, particularly the one blessing we make afterwards, is actually thanking, it's gratitude. So what's interesting is that the famous one, the most famous blessing after we eat is Birkat HaMazon, benching, right? And that's done after we eat a proper meal with bread and so on and so forth. And benching has, it's a mitzvah, it's one of the mitzvot in the Torah, to bench and to say, bless after we've eaten. And blessing has a number of, the benching itself has a number of blessings. The first blessing of benching was made, was composed by Moses himself. Why? It was composed by Moses for the Jewish people to thank God for the manna that fell from heaven during the time they were in the desert. Right? As we know, they came out of Egypt, and after a month, the matzah ran out, which for most people is a good thing normally, not a bad thing, but for them it was a problem because they had nothing to eat. Right? Imagine they ate matzah for a whole month. We complained for 8 days. A whole month they had to eat matzah. Okay, I'll let you into a little secret. Their matzah was a bit different to ours. It was soft. So it was like eating pita bread for a month. Okay? Not so bad, right? But there was no lamb to put on, you have to understand. Plain pita bread.
No hummus,
nothing. Okay. Because halachically, we don't know how to make soft mats anymore, so we don't do that today. So ours is thin and cardboard-like. But okay, but nevertheless, but a month of it, right? But they were very lucky because they had what to eat. I mean, these people were wandering in the desert. Anyway, a month later, after Egypt, it ran out. And nothing to eat. Imagine, 3 million people in the desert, nothing to eat. So God says, don't worry, don't complain, trust in God, and it'll be okay. The next day, manna falls from heaven and continues to fall for 40 years. But just imagine, particularly in the beginning, imagine going to sleep at night, just to put this in context, imagine going to sleep at night with nothing to eat, and there's nothing in the house. You have to trust in God every single morning that money is going to rain down, right? I suppose after a number of years, they kind of got used to it, so they expected it already. But at the beginning, for sure, it's a test. It was a real test, and it was a test. It was a great thing. It was a great miracle. The manna fell from heaven. It could taste whatever you like it to taste like, apparently, and so on and so forth. But it was a thing that fell from heaven. So they had tremendous gratitude. So Moses composes a blessing, right? Moses composes a blessing to thank God for the manna that fell from heaven. So the commentaries ask the question, that's great. So why, when we bench, do we still say that blessing? We don't eat manna. Right? Theirs was what they ate was called, it's called in the literature, lecha min hashamayim, bread from heaven. We eat what's called lecha min haaretz, hence the blessing of motzi lecha min haaretz, right? So we eat, it's a different bread. So we understand the second blessing, the third blessing, the fourth blessing, but why do we still say the first blessing? The first blessing was specifically composed for the Jewish people to make in the desert when they had the manna that fell from heaven. And the commentaries say a very powerful thing. Because when we go to sleep at night and our pantry is full, or we have the resources to go to the nearest supermarket and buy food, we need to understand that it's no different than the manna falling from heaven. It might just look different. It might look more guaranteed. It might look that it's going to happen. But if we truly understand where everything comes from, and we truly understand the gifts of life and how every small thing is truly a gift, then we view any piece of bread that we eat or any piece of food that we eat as much as a gift as it would have been manna falling from heaven. And that's why we still make that blessing. Part of that blessing we make today in the first part of the benching is to thank God for the manna from heaven, because we try to become aware and conscious of the fact that even the food we eat, which is not manna from heaven, and it seems to be a lot more guaranteed than the manna from heaven, nevertheless we say, no, it's not more guaranteed. It's still a gift. It's a gift just like the manna, and that's part of our awareness. So I've been mentioning that, but I was just giving one example of designating each day an activity. Now, it might be an activity when we talk to people. It might be, you know, I'm going to have a conversation with someone. I'm going to make an effort. The conversation is going to take an hour, but let me make an effort for the first 5 minutes to be fully present. Fully present means, and we've talked about this before, to be fully listening. Fully listening means not to think about anything else, not even to think about the responses you're going to give, but to be fully engaged, to be fully focused on the other person and the other person's world. It takes practice. But the days to do it are the days where things are smooth. Those are the days to strengthen the muscle of awareness. So just to summarize, it's to designate, it's a very practical thing we can do every single day. Not a lot of things, because if we overreach and we overexpect, we know that it doesn't work. But every day, on a regular day, where things are kind of going according to plan, according to routine, to take a few things, whether it's a simple thing like driving a car or taking a shower, and to be aware of what's actually happening, or eating a piece of food, and or maybe 5 minutes of breathing, even without a specific breathing exercise, but just to take a couple of minutes and be aware of the breath, and with the breath, the presence of the soul, of the neshama that comes with the breath, and so on and so forth. But just to build up that muscle of awareness, to choose every day a few moments or a few activities where we practice the tool of awareness. That's a really important thing. The second is the tool of non-judging. This is probably a bit more difficult. So I'll tell you a little story, a personal story, and again, I always tell you, I only tell you the stories that work. Okay. Sometimes I confess the stories that don't work. But believe me, there's plenty of them. I'm normal, just like the rest of us. But I'll tell you a story I was just thinking about this morning. I was in yeshiva many, many years ago. One of the years we were in yeshiva, I was with a good friend of mine. And we were, that particular program, that yeshiva was for a couple of years. And we finished the 1 year, we graduated to the next year, so to speak. That particular year had a teacher who everyone knew in the yeshiva that he didn't give the best shiur. Just no one's kind of wanted to be in his shiur, but that was the order of the yeshiva. You had to graduate to the next level, right? So most people went in to that year. It was known like a kind of almost like a wasted year. Like that year, him again, you know. So, you know, the first year was a pretty good guy. The third year was a really good guy. Second year, good guy. I mean, nice shiur, but you couldn't get out of the yeshiva year as much. Because the way it used to work in yeshiva, just in case you're not familiar, most of the day actually we'd learn ourselves anyway. The yeshiva system is we learn b'chavruta. So really the key to success in a yeshiva environment is not the good shiur that you get, but it's the good chavruta that you get. So you have to have a good study partner who you sit most of the day and actually study one-on-one, and you battle things through, and if you need to ask something, there's people always to ask. So the truth is you can learn and grow and succeed without having a class altogether, but a good class, which was normally once a day for like an hour and a half, on the material that you're learning yourself, if it was really good, it was really worthwhile. And this particular year was known that wasn't so good. So a friend of mine, and people used to go in with that attitude, and because they went in with that attitude, most of the time that shiur was a bit of a wasted year, because that was the expectation. It was not unrealistic. It was actually close to reality. And therefore, it was done. Incidentally, this particular teacher doesn't teach in yeshiva anymore. Which is interesting. But anyway. A friend of mine and I were talking about it beforehand, before the year began. And we decided, listen, you know what? This is actually ridiculous. Why? There are certain things we can't control. We're going to be in this class. We're going to have to show up every single day and sit through an hour and a half of the shiur, right? Why don't we just give it a shot? Why don't we decide, forget about it, it is what it is, and take it really seriously, like over seriously. So me and him decided, okay, you know what we're going to do? We're going to go every day to the shiur, and we're going to take it like we're going to take notes, and we're going to write them up again, and we're going to review the shiur afterwards. If it's good, it's not good, whatever the case, we're going to review it afterwards. We're going to go back and discuss it with the guy. We're going to give him notes that we've written up. The whole business, right? And it was one of the best years I've had in yeshiva. Yeah. The shiur didn't change, by the way. The criticism was correct. It wasn't not correct, right? Because so many experiences, and they talk about this a lot in mindfulness, so many experiences are experienced the way we prejudge them. So many conversations happen the way we prejudge them. So many meetings happen that you walk into a meeting, and we all think we're expert judges and expert judges of character. Maybe we are, maybe we're not, I don't know. But we walk into a meeting, we size up the situation, and we worked it all out before it's even started, and that's the way the meeting happens. That's the way the conversation happens. That's the way the discussion happens, right? In mindfulness literature, they talk a lot about being present in a non-judgmental way, right? What does that mean? Because as I've said many times, to be fully present in a situation, you can't just be aware and fully absorbed in what you're doing. Because if you've judged that situation, if you've judged that particular experience, that particular moment, right, with things that have happened yesterday or things you perceive that are going to happen tomorrow or in 2 hours from now, then you're not fully present. Fully present means to be present now in a way where we've talked about this concept of the freshness of the moment, the beginner's mind. In other words, that it cannot be influenced by what happened before or what might happen after. Now that's a very hard thing to do. We were lucky. It came about, I'm not even sure, we hadn't read anything on mindfulness. It was just, it was a good decision. Like I say, it was one of the stories that worked. But it's an amazing example because it changed the entire year. Because we decided, and part of it came as often it does. Part of it came is that we need to engage in certain experiences whether we like it or not. That's what life is. Life is, anyways, we're going to be involved. Anyways, you're going to be there. Anyways, you're expected to show up. And often we show up to things or to places or to people begrudgingly because we have to and we know we have to. But we've got this all preconceived idea of how it's going to happen. And that's the way it happens because it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. So one of the greatest tools of mindfulness, therefore, is to learn the art of not judging, which includes, by the way, not judging people. One of the most difficult things to do. We've talked about this many times. I don't know how many times I think about the sentence in Pirkei Avot, the ethics of the fathers, have it done at Kol Adam L'Kaf Zchut, judge everyone favorably. It's one of the most difficult things to do because we see the whole world through our own prism. We see it through our own vision, and that's the way we judge people, conversations, experiences, and things. Right. Incidentally, he wasn't my father-in-law then, but... No, not this man. I'm saying... No. By the way, this man's a lovely man, by the way. We actually remained, it was incredible, we remained such good friends. It was like incredible. Anyway, but until today, I never told him the story, and I hope he never listens to this recording, but no, he won't, don't worry. My father-in-law, who was also one of my mentors in yeshiva, later became my father-in-law, and I was talking to you about him before, I was just thinking about this morning as I was preparing this. He was one of the people that I learned this, didn't learn it from, or I should have learned more probably, but he's one of the people that were example. He had an amazing talent of talking to someone completely not judgmentally. And what was amazing was it was good for him and it was good for the person because people that spoke to him always felt very, very valued. Could be the biggest nudnik on the planet. You know, sometimes someone comes to talk to you and says, not him again. You know, you got that feeling, no. Or you see, you watch your iPhone and the thing pops up and, are you serious? I have to take this phone call, and say, him or her again kind of thing. No, please, He had this thing that if he decided to talk to you, he decided he was going to get the most out of the conversation. He would suddenly become amazingly interested, ask questions. He was pretty good at terminating the conversation also when he wanted to, which was another talent, but in a way that wasn't offensive, which was quite amazing. But while he was having the conversation, he had this amazing talent of just being completely there and getting the most out of it, like learning, because he was a perpetual student. So he would always, if he had to be there, he was going to learn something from it, which was interesting. And when he did that, learning something from someone else is also an amazing gift of giving, because when you can learn something from someone, you're also giving them the gift of being able to teach you, which is an incredible thing. And it came out tremendously after he passed away of how many people, the most unexpected human beings who felt so valued by him and said that he gave them such respect and they felt so appreciated by him and so on like that. People you would never imagine. And I think it all came because of this, because when he spoke to them, he valued them because he decided to value them even for himself as well, because he would learn and therefore they would teach. Therefore, he had a great experience, and they felt valued. Right? Now that needs, for those that don't have this naturally, like most of us, I think, or at least I speak for myself, is it needs practice. And again, this is one of the tools that need to be practiced every single day. We need to take experiences that we are going to experience, a conversation we're about to have, a meeting we're about to go into, a phone call we're about to take, even the ones we don't want to take maybe. Right, not to do this the whole day, but to not have expectations and not judge it, not prejudge it. To think to yourself, let me give this a completely fresh chance. Yes, I know the person, I know the personality, and I know what could happen, and I probably worked out what they want from me, and I probably understand their opinions, and so on and so forth. But to take one experience or two experiences every single day on days that are going well, again, we're talking about practicing the mindfulness tools on good days and resolving not to judge, resolving to actually engage in it with a complete open mind, with a complete freshness, with a complete presence, and to be fully absorbed and maximize the potential. It's a very, very liberating thing. It takes a lot of practice, but it's a muscle that we have to practice really every single day. This is the third one, is what I mentioned last week. Patience. This one I'm not going to tell you any stories because I don't have a lot of good stories to tell you on this one. But it's something that is critical to mindfulness. Building the patience muscle every single day. And we all do things. We all have things that we do that we don't have patience for. And what we tend to do is to get them over and done with. Right? Now, that's very opposite of the whole concept of mindfulness. Because everything, every moment we experience, and this is why it's so in line, we'll talk about it a bit more later, but it's so in line with Jewish thinking, this, that we don't engage in anything by chance, right? And we don't engage in anything, if we're supposed to engage in it, if it's appropriate, if it's not appropriate, if it's against our values, we shouldn't be engaging in it to begin with. But if we are, if we live what's called a value-based living, which we've talked about before, then anything we engage in has a purpose. Because life has a purpose. Every day has a meaning. Every day has a reason that we're here. Every moment really has a meaning that we're here. No matter what it is. It might be some very menial task. It might be entertainment. It might be leisure. It might be relaxation. Whatever it is. But if it's something we're doing and we think it's appropriate to do, and it fits with our values, then it's important. Even though it seems completely unimportant. Now what happens to us a lot of the time is that things which seem unimportant, we just want to get over and done with. We all have those things we just want to get over and done with. And to get something over and done with doesn't allow us to be properly mindful and doesn't strengthen the mindfulness muscle in any way. And therefore, one of the tools that we have to try and strengthen is this concept to take something every day. Once again, it's an exercise that we can do with ourselves. Take something every day that we know we don't particularly like doing and do it slowly. Do it mindfully. It's a hard thing. It's, again, takes practice. But it's something we have to try and practice every day to strengthen that mindfulness muscle. The next thing is the concept of non-striving and acceptance, which we've talked about before, but such an important muscle. Again, such an important thing. Tied into what we said before, but it's such an important thing to try and practice, to try and build into our psyche every single day that things don't have to be completed necessarily, meaning that we don't have to reach the destination. But we have to value what we're doing now. We've talked about this from a Jewish point of view so many times that in Jewish thought particularly, it's the journey that counts, not the destination. When we focus on a destination, it's impossible to be mindful. Because when we focus on destination, meaning, now let me clarify that. When I say we focus on destination, I don't mean focused on the goal. Goal and destination are two separate things. We have to be focused on the goal because that's what gets us moving. We talked about this last week, the whole concept of the Jews that met at the Red Sea, not being focused on the goal, and therefore they broke into all these different opinions, and God said, no, just focus on the goal and keep going. But keep going means that we have to keep going now. We have to keep going, take the next step, but it's the journey that's the most important. Right? That's why in Jewish thought, for example, one of the greatest mitzvot, one of the greatest commandments of the Torah is to study Torah, is to learn. And we know that in learning, there's no curriculum that you have to learn. Meaning there's suggested material that people have to learn in order to fulfill the mitzvah of gaining Jewish knowledge. And the goal in general is to gain as much Jewish knowledge as possible. It's one of the greatest mitzvot of the Torah. It's one of the things that have kept the Jewish people alive and well and surviving throughout all the ages, through the ups and through the downs. The concept of study. We call the people of the book for a reason. Right? But there was never ever an expectation of how much you have to learn. What you have to finish. There's no diploma at the end. There's no qualification that you have to reach in order to fulfill that mitzvah. Every page. There's a very famous saying, I'm not sure where it comes from, that God doesn't count the pages, he counts the hours. In other words, it's how much you put in, not how much you covered. Right? As long as you're doing it properly. Now obviously there's a concept of covering ground because you want to gain knowledge, you want to know, you want to be able to be a person filled with knowledge, but the concept there is, it's the effort. And therefore that's another concept that's linked in the whole idea of mindfulness, which is also about expectations. often we get very frustrated and distracted because we have unrealistic expectations. We have unrealistic expectations because we want to reach goals that are unattainable. We want to reach destinations that are unattainable. And when we don't, we think whatever we've done is futile, whatever we've done is useless, whatever we've done doesn't make any, it has no value. And that's part of the practicing of the muscle is every single day to give value to every hour, to give value to every 5 minutes, to give value what we have accomplished. We set out a day, we have a diary, we want to plan the day, and we have a goal, what we want to accomplish that day, and often it goes off course. In fact, more times than not, our day goes off course and doesn't exactly work out exactly the way we want it to work out, even if we're very organized, right? But it's that idea of acceptance, an idea of not wanting to specifically reach the end destination that is so important to be able to practice. And what it's based on, essentially, is what I said before. It's based on the idea of value-based living. See, there's two ways to live our life. One is to be value-based, and the other one is to be productivity-based. In other words, what we want to achieve, right? Two different things. It's two different ways of living. Now, obviously, in a value-based living, part of that is also achieving. Part of that is also producing, because that's part of living. Part of successful living is to achieve certain things and to reach certain goals and to produce certain resources or whatever the case is, right? But it's a very, very different way of living. Value-based living means to live a life where our life is focused on being a better human being, on helping other people, on bringing God into the world, on being more spiritual, and making the world a better place in whatever way, right? That's what value-based living is. In value-based living, you don't need to reach a goal. You don't need to reach the end, because every moment is an end. Every moment is a moment that we can live our values. Right? Does that make sense? Because when we... Even if we want to reach a certain, even if we set out in the morning to accomplish something and we don't get there, we might not get there in terms that we wanted to produce, but sometimes we can get more to in sync with our values if we didn't get to where we wanted to get. Why? Because sometimes we set up in the morning, we want to do a certain thing, we wanted to have a certain conversation, we wanted to have a meeting, we wanted to arrange something, we wanted to accomplish something, and we were challenged throughout the day. Someone called us or shouldn't have called us. Someone got in the way. Our car broke down. Whatever the case was, we end up not accomplishing what we wanted to accomplish that day. Now, that can be very, very annoying. It can be very, very frustrating. Last night I gave some of you were there. Last night I gave a lecture on happiness. So just before the lecture, I introduced myself to someone I hadn't seen before. And she said, Rabbi, I don't know what you're going to say, but tell me how I can have a happiness when my whole computer just crashed. I said, you're at the wrong shear. It is. It's devastating. It's a devastating thing. I mean, we have become so addicted and dependent on technology that we wake up in the morning and our computer's crashed and we're not getting emails. Phew. Right? I mean, can you imagine what you're missing out on? Like, who knows what's happening in the world till, you know, by the time an email starts working again, right? Yeah. Yeah, the problem is, I don't mean machai if everyone's email stopped working, you see. But if you have email and I don't, that's a problem, because I don't know what I'm missing out, you know. Some of us suffer from FOMO, you know. FOMO is like, for those who don't know, it's fear of missing out, right? So wake up in the morning and we need the computer. I mean, this is easier said than done, but I'm just saying, if you wake up in the morning and the computer has crashed, and it's going to take a couple of hours till it's fixed, and we just... Our phone isn't working right. So yeah, we will not achieve that day we wanted to achieve. So if our day is a productivity-based day, then the day is a waste. If our day is a value-based day, then this is the greatest opportunity. This is the day I have an opportunity to become a much stronger person. This is the day I have the opportunity that notwithstanding that my computer has crashed, I will remain calm. I'll be a nicer person. I won't scream at everyone in my pathway just because my computer has crashed, that's got nothing to do with them, right? And I won't be irritable. That's a hard thing to do, but that's what value-based living is all about. So therefore, value-based living means that I can alter my expectations, because any moment I experience, any hour that I go through is an hour that I can always live by my values. We are never divorced from our values. We are never divorced from becoming a better person. Whatever situation we're in, it might be a totally different day than we expected, but our values haven't changed, and the opportunity to live by those values has never changed, never ever. Because the values are from within. And the world around me can change, but what's inside of me can't change. And therefore I can always do that. But that needs practice. And again, it doesn't come quickly, it doesn't come that easily. And we cannot wait till the computer crashes to start living like this. This is the point I wanted to make. Because when the computer crashes in the morning and everything is lost and all your contacts and emails have gone, and you don't know where they are, in some server in another country somewhere, but right? But I don't have them. When that happens, your day is so ruined, it's not a day to start practicing acceptance or to start practicing this concept of non-striving. We need to do it on a day that's going well and something little gets out of touch, out of whack. Then we practice. No, hold on a second. It's not so bad. I can do it. We practice that. We cannot wait for the day that everything goes haywire, because then we won't be able to do it. That's the point that I want to bring out today. We have to do it on day. And every day we have little things that go out of routine. Little things that happen unexpected. And that's when we have to practice this concept of being non-striving, of saying, it's okay. If I don't finish completely, I finished it most of it, it's okay. Because it's not about reaching the goal or the destination, it's about the journey. The next thing is the concept of trust. Now, in Jewish thought, this is an incredibly important one. We call it in Jewish, bitachon, right? Because in order to live a value-based living, and in order not to worry about when things are completely out of control, we have to give up control. And give up control means to trust in a force that's higher than us, and to understand who controls us and the world around us. As we said so many times, we're in control of nothing except for everything that's inside of us, the way we respond to the rest of the world, right? And you know, in Jewish thought, there's an amazing concept. And I just want to talk about it for a bit, because it's an incredible idea. Sometimes we see it work openly, sometimes we have to trust that it will work, but it's a work in progress. But this idea of bitachon means to trust in God, right? So often people always say, what does that mean? What does that mean? So I trust in God, so I don't have to do anything, so I don't have to go to work in the morning. I mean, that's ridiculous, obviously, right? So we know that's ridiculous, of course, because it's ridiculous because God told us that after we finish with the desert, manna was not going to fall from the heaven anymore, and we have to work for it, right? But what he wanted us to understand is, and this is the key, that there's a verse in the Torah that says, "Uberachacha Hashem Elokecha b'chol asher ta'aseh." God will bless you in everything that you do, meaning that you need to do. We call that in Hebrew hishtadlut. You have to be mishtadel, you have to try. You have to make a vessel for God's blessing to come into. But you have to acknowledge at the end of the day, it's not your effort that made it happen. That's why we still, as I said before, we still make the blessing on the manna that falls from heaven, because although we have created the vessel, we've gone to work, we've made the phone call, we've gone to a doctor, whatever the case is, we've done what we need to do, we need to acknowledge that at the end of the day we're not in control, and God will send that blessing. And God can sometimes send the blessing not through the vessel that we make, which is an incredible thing. It's part of bitachon. And if you think about it so many times in life, this is so true. I'll share with you something personal. I just experienced this firsthand. Now again, sometimes God tests us, sometimes we don't see it so openly, and I'm not being, you know, but it hurt. But I just saw it recently, very personally, with my daughter's engagement, which is incredible. You know, the system that we live in is a system of shidduchim, where parents have to do a lot of work to try and find someone that will meet your daughter or meet your son or whatever the case is. And you know, you have to make contacts and people have to introduce. Obviously, at the end, they date and they have to like each other. Which, you know, after you've done all the work, you'll hope that they can meet and not like each other. But that happens too. Anyway, but you have to do. So my wife and I often had this discussion about bitachon. Because sometimes when things go a little bit slower than you want them to go, and things that, you know, are not going as smooth as you want them to do, so you start to get worried. And then you remind yourself, no, that's not the way we do it. We have to have bitachon, particularly when it comes to something like this, because the Talmud says that marriage is the most strange phenomenon. It's the most miraculous thing altogether. It's the thing in the world that doesn't make any sense to begin with. So therefore, God has to make it happen. And you need to do a little bit, but you do. So we always used to strengthen ourselves and say, you know what? We're just going to keep on going and keep on doing what we need to do. and it's going to happen, but it won't happen of what we do. We were convinced in that. And it's exactly what happened. It had nothing to do with any other efforts that we made. It was totally out of the box, out of the blue. She happened to be in some place. Someone happened to see her. She happened to be in a car with someone. Someone called us up, and that's the way it happened. It had zero to do with any effort that we had put in for the last two years. However, I am convinced that it happened because, or God allowed it to happen because you put in the effort. In other words, you need to put in effort. And that's a principle which is so true in every part of life, right? Why is that so powerful? Because first of all, it's powerful because it reminds us to give up control. We are people who just like to be in control, therefore, you know, we get anxious. When you give up control, it takes away a bit of the worry because God has a plan. He's going to run the world the way He wants to run the world. But it's also powerful for a different reason. Because when you do something and it doesn't work, so we get upset, right? Why do we get upset? Because we are convinced that the equation is that what's supposed to happen is going to be a result of what I do, right? So if I do something and it doesn't work, then obviously I'm going to be upset. But when you understand it's actually not true, your doing and the thing happening actually isn't always related. Because the way the world goes, and if you think about it and you absorb this a lot, you'll start to notice this. What we do, we have to do, because that's what God said. God wants us to put in the effort. He wants us to be responsible. It's a moral choice to be responsible, right? Because God said, I want you to be responsible people. I want you to take care of your health. I want you to be safe. I want you to work for a living. And I want you to do what it takes to achieve those things in life which you're supposed to achieve. But remember that the blessing comes from me. And therefore, when you do what you're supposed to do, you make the moral choice and you do what you're supposed to do, and it doesn't work, that's not true. It did work. What worked? You did what you're supposed to do. You made the vessel. How God will send it, it'll come from a different way. And often it's that trust and that awareness itself that brings the blessing. If you absorb that idea that when I've done something and it was unsuccessful, a person looking for a job, so they've got to be responsible. Obviously, if you lie in your bed all day and don't got any job interviews, it's not going to happen. Clear. It's not going to happen because God doesn't send manna from heaven. It's just simple, right? He did in the desert, but not anymore. But He does, a different way. Meaning, He says, you need to get up, you need to send out resumes, you need to send out job interviews, you need to do whatever you can. However, when you go to the job interview and you didn't get the job, you need to think, well, God's protecting me. I did what I'm supposed to do. How many stories I've heard like that, where people went to 3-4 job interviews, didn't get it, and then suddenly something just happened and they got it. So why didn't it just happen just like that? Why do they have to go to the job interviews first? Because you need to do what you need to do. You need to create that vessel. You need to put in the effort. Right? This concept, by the way, is very brought out very strongly in the story of Purim, which we're about to celebrate a week from Sunday. The Sunday week is Purim. In the story of Purim, it was like that. In the story of Purim, the Jews were had a problem. And the problem was that they were faced with this tremendous threat from Haman. And Mordechai goes to Esther and says, this is what we've got to do. Politically, this is the responsible thing to do. You're a queen, you're in the palace, go to Ahasuerus. Find favor in his eyes, hopefully he'll receive you warmly, which was a risk in itself. It was a bit of a madman, Ahasuerus. That's what the Talmud says. So therefore, you got to do it. So Esther says, I'll do it, but you're forgetting one very important element. I'll only do it if everyone understands that that's only the effort that we have to put in. That really it's God running the show. So therefore, gather the people in Shushan, that's a famous part of the Megillah. Let them fast for 3 days. Let them reconnect to God. Let them reconnect to their faith. Let them reconnect to their trust in God. Then I'm going to do what I need to do. Because then it'll work. But you need to understand where the real blessing is coming from. Right? That's how the story works. So why am I bringing this all in? Because that frustration, that distraction of thinking we're in control is often what holds us back from everything. It gets us frustrated, it gets us stressed, it holds us back from appreciating every moment, from being present in what we're doing, from letting go of anxiety and worry and so on and so forth. So bitachon is a very difficult thing to practice. But again, we try to practice with small things. Every day we walk out, we have positive thinking. We think good. There's an expression, when you think good, that thinking itself creates a vessel of blessing, right? Not easy to do, but we have to try. Because what we have to do is we have to wake up in the morning and saying we're not in control. And we're going to try and demonstrate that by when things go wrong, we're going to be okay. We're going to say, okay, I've done what I need to do. Hopefully God will do what He needs to do. And if He doesn't, then it wasn't meant to happen. But to give up that trust, to give up that control, that's a difficult thing to do, but an incredibly liberating thing to do. And finally, just briefly, the concept of self-worth. Because often our inability to let go of worry, stress, guilt, and so on is very much connected with something that we've talked about so many times, and that's how we look at ourselves and how we value ourselves. Some of the times, the guilt, the frustration, the worry, the anxiety, the anger, whatever the case is, all has to do... That's not an animal, is it? Oh, that's okay. Has to do with... That's just something alive. That's okay. Sometimes it all has to do with the way we view ourselves. In other words, because so often the way we view ourselves is so dependent on how we think other people are thinking of us. The concept of the addiction to approval seeking. Sometimes we feel guilty because we devalue ourselves, because we don't understand our own self-worth. And therefore, part of the practicing of mindfulness tools that we have to do is understanding the self-value, understanding that we have value. Understanding even though we make a mistake, it doesn't matter, we're still a good person. We still have that inner soul. All the things we've talked about many, many times, but I'm just bringing it in now because it's so related to the concept of the mindfulness ability. It's one of the tools. But again, it's something we have to practice on days which are going well. So in short, therefore, today, the summary is that there are many, many tools that assist us in strengthening that mindfulness muscle, the real us, the real who we are, so that when we have distracting thoughts or we have intruding thoughts, we are strong enough to be able to engage with them or fight them off or control them, whatever the case is. But we have to take the days which are going well, not the days where we have those negative thinking patterns, and strengthen those muscles so that we can properly engage with them when things don't go so well. Next week is, just to remind everyone, next week is the last week, because the week after I'm traveling for the wedding, Bezrat Hashem. And so next week we'll put it all together, hopefully. In the meantime, have a wonderful week.